Wig. So tomorrow I got nothing.
I really believe that everybody should be born poor. 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get a new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth, who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
All right, welcome to Peace and Social Justice. Thanks for having me, Pastor Jesse Kearns.
Hey, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I was going to lead in, let people know what we got planned for today. Jesse had reached out to me to put together a special segment around, you know, some of the issues around poverty and drug addiction that were on the city council agenda last week. And
On everyone's agenda.
But I'm real short and sweet, you know, when I looked at the whole issue of sit and lie and how things are going downtown, if I had one person in the world to pick to talk to and get a candid interview, it would have been Jason Allen. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate to do that. He was 2 years kind of a lead ambassador, had the Hut phone, the whole nine yards. He moved to Reno in January. So it was a really beautiful interview. So to say to the listeners, it was a 50-minute total long-length interview. And I plan on putting that out as an extended, because this is a radio edit, because we've got quite a bit of other content that we're going to cover, and I'll have some other extended content that we didn't have airtime for. But we're going to lead with Jason and talking about his experiences and then the sit and lie. And then I'm real pleased that we'll have Alex Brown in the studio as well.
Okay.
To talk about that. And then we're going to have some of the folks that were at City Council. So we're going to have Mayor Randall Stone and Vice Mayor Alex Brown introducing the sit, lie, and the needle, the sit and lie ordinance and the offenses against public property. And then we have a little clip from Sean Morgan and Dr. Lindsay Briggs, PhD, public health. She did a wonderful job kind of teeing this whole thing up. So I'm ready to start this, kick this off whenever you are, Jesse.
Okay, well, let's do some underwriters here. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico State Continuing Education and Open University Program. Open University opens doors to new educational and career opportunities, letting you take Chico State classes on a space available basis without being admitted. So for more information, call 898-6105 or visit openu.csuchico.edu. And by Sonia Airy, a local Allstate insurance agent. Sonia is concerned about the community and helps families understand their immediate and long-term needs and goals. Whether you're protecting your life, home, auto, boat, or motorcycle, Sonia Airy can help. They also do 401k rollovers. Sonia can be reached by calling or texting 345-2351.
Gamble Mash here, doing a special segment for the 21st of February, Peace and Social Justice, and we're looking at the sit and lie, the revisiting of sit and lie by the current city council. And I'm really pleased to be speaking with a longtime friend. I've known Jason Allen 5 years now, and Jason Allen is a local comic, and he was one of the first paid downtown ambassadors. And I'm interviewing him on the phone here from Reno. So welcome back to KZFR, Jason Allen.
Great to have me. It's always a pleasure. I love KZFR.
Yeah, it's just a wonderful, wonderful downtown establishment, isn't it? And I know you're very familiar with the downtown establishments from your time as an ambassador. Maybe kind of introduce yourself around, you know, when you started it as an ambassador, what that entailed.
Certainly. We started the program in its current form on November 15th, 2017. Hired a handful of folks to basically try, you know, our goal was to keep downtown clean, safe, and friendly. So, you know, a lot of graffiti abatement and cleaning up garbage and trash. We also gave directions and recommendations to first-time visitors or people who just needed some guidance on where something was. And, you know, just also, reaching out to the homeless and trying to connect them with services or at the very least just give them a, you know, give them somebody to for them to listen to, and you know, treat them as people as they deserve.
You know, I wanted to give you a shout out for the escalation skills. I call it the de-escalation skills that you have, and I see a similar approach that you use that I use, and it's just kind of like I treat everyone as equals. You know, if someone's dealing with an issue or a problem, I'm not talking down to them. I'm talking with them, cool and calm, and give them some options, and they usually make the best one. What would you say to all that?
You're absolutely right, and the very important key thing is to not treat it as a confrontation. You definitely want to keep the spotlight on them, but you want to try to find out where their head is at in any given situation. So rather than them saying, you know, why are you doing this terrible thing, it's like, well, why are you having a bad day? Why are you upset today?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, and get them talking about it, and you know, it may not have anything to do with the situation at hand, but maybe something else happened earlier in the day that kind of made their mood a bad one, and you know, just kind of talk that out with them, and then kind of get them thinking about something other than what they're doing at that given moment, and you know, just talk to them as person to person rather than as a uniform to a citizen, so to speak.
Yeah, to enforce your will.
Right, right. Rather than being like, "Hey, you should be doing this," it's like, let's come up with a different solution.
You know what I've found over the years too, Jason, working with, you know, a demographic of people that are destitute and they're on the streets putting up with harassment and assault and, you know, going here and there just to get a meal, just all of the tremendous amount of work it takes to be homeless. Anyone thinks that's an easy job, they're far mistaken. But I've found when people are like angry and they say something angrily, if you respond, you know, kindly and softly, it really, it shakes them up in the right direction. They're like, whoa, what was that?
You're certainly correct, and if I may tell an anecdote really fast. When we first started the program, you know, they were talking about de-escalation, and I was personally pretty skeptical about the whole thing. I'm like, there's no way that words can work. This doesn't sound right to me. And I was sent to a situation where somebody was lying on a sidewalk, hanging out onto the curb, and they had a grocery cart that was overturned, and they were just kind of screaming at the sky.
Wow.
And so I went up there, and I'm like, "Well, what's going on, my friend?" And he was basically screaming stuff that made no sense, to be honest. And I asked him what his name was, and as soon as I did that, he stopped and he looked at me and he says, "Well, nobody's asked me that in 3 years." You know, at that point, he started to talking about, you know, he'd worked for a very long time for a local utility, and you know, he lost his mother, and so he turned to drug abuse. And at the time he's telling me this, he's very matter of fact. He got up off of the ground and he picked up his things, and you know, I think he was just really happy that somebody was there to listen to him. And sometimes that's all it takes to de-escalate a situation, is just lend an ear and just shut up and listen, basically.
Big time.
And it was a very powerful moment for me. That moment basically kind of set the tone for my career as an ambassador. It's like, you know, just listening does help sometimes. It diffuses some pretty powerful situations, and I'll carry that with me for the rest of my life.
Listeners just joining, we are talking to Jason Allen, one of the original downtown ambassadors working for the downtown PBID in Chico, California. He's since moved to Reno. But maybe a little discussion, Jason, around the problems downtown and how it's not always just, quote-unquote, homeless people.
That is absolutely correct. I mean, you know, and there's a couple of unfortunate truths to that. Number one is, ever since social media has come around, it's, you know, either the conversation could be swayed any direction, and there's a very vocal few that will sit there and tell you that the root of all the problems in Chico are homeless people, and that's very unfair and very untrue. I've seen, you know, college students, regular citizens such as ourselves. There's a bad apple in every demographic you want to look at,
mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, there are no exceptions. And, you know, you look at the richest people in the land, you look at the poorest people in the land, there's going to be some bad apples. But the unfortunate truth is that some people are picking on the homeless because honestly, it's low hanging fruit. You know, they're not going to be able to defend themselves, and so it goes. And downtown, yeah, there's some homeless people that do some pretty bad things, but it's not just them at all. And until somebody steps up and realizes that, that narrative is going to continue about the homeless, and it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, you know what I've found over the years, what's just astounded me is how tight that community is and how they look after they look after one another. And for folks that have never been homeless, you know, I was a runaway before they had the term homeless, and I literally lived on the streets for 7 months documenting it. No matter what your situation is, you're in public space, and anyone at any time can walk into your living room or be at your bedroom, wherever you happen to be, and just kind of sit down and go, hey, I'm here. How are you going to deal with me? It's a very, very kind of chaotic situation. But I've found some of the skills that these community members have gathered to kind of help one another is just astounding. Maybe you could add some stories to that.
You know, I got to tell you, some of it is actually really inspiring to watch, you know, because hardly in any other demographic do you see that. I mean, a lot of people like to talk about a sense of community as far as like, community watches and things like that, and that's well and good. But you know, as far as the word community goes, and its purest definition, I've never seen a better example of a sense of community than I have with the homeless that I saw in downtown Chico. They make sure they keep each other fed, they keep each other informed, they keep each other safe, and I've never seen anything like that in any other situation than I did with that. And it's actually kind of a beautiful thing to watch in its own way. And people can learn from that very, very, very easily if they chose to.
Why don't you give us some good, I had the good and the bad. I'm thinking of that old Western with Clint Eastwood, good, the bad, the ugly. But maybe a couple of a good story and a bad, you know, kind of, you know, what you've seen. Kind of a couple of stories.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, again, you know, there's a certain bias against the homeless, and you know, they're mentally ill, they're addicted and things like this, and they don't even know their own names because they're so out of it and things like that. And there's a gentleman who definitely, you know, if you were to just kind of see him, you know, from a distance and not know the man, he doesn't have a lot going for him. But if you get to talk to the guy, he knows a lot more about NFL football than a lot of people do. And it surprised me at first when he asked me, like, you know, who do you think is going to win this week between this team and that team? And I'm like, really? You follow? Wow. Yeah. Cool. You know? And so, you know, I think just kind of as a blanket answer to that question, you know, again, a lot of people fail to look at these folks as people, but they also have hobbies and interests and skills and things like that. And so this particular gentleman, he was a very, very, very passionate fan of the NFL. And that's just one example of, like, many examples of folks that I got to know over my time there that, you know, I could talk certain things with them because, you know, I shared the same passions with them.
All right, listeners, it's Shawnee and Gam Wamash here on the Peace and Social Justice Show. You are listening to an interview with Jason Allen, a former downtown ambassador on the streets of Chico, who has since moved to Reno. What we're going to do right now is I have an outline. It's basically, this is a production that I did back in 2013 when I was doing street-level journalism and was actually an ambassador myself. And it really does a great job of laying out what some of the quote-unquote business issues were and the impact to the homeless community. And then we're going to come back to the studio and talk to Jason and see how things are same or different 7 years later here on People Power Radio.
So many words come to mind when I think about the absurdity of outlawing the simple act of sitting and lying peacefully in a public space. One word I think I'm going to actually focus on is flippant, which is not showing a serious or respectful attitude towards the situation at hand. This young woman is simply sitting on a curb. Is she seriously an issue? Perhaps this gentleman is, who has to roll everything he owns down the road. Isn't that unsettling? Or this young woman, who has to rummage through garbage to survive. One of my favorites, don't they have anything better to do and possibly the best of all time? Can't they go somewhere else? So what is it precisely that folks are describing as, quote, problems downtown? I was fortunate to spend countless hours, many of it as a downtown ambassador, presenting that question to businesses and homeless community. This is what I found. Parking, first and foremost, gives a very good indication of the overall health and safety downtown. Next up, those loud, obnoxious, scary people walking around that people would like to disappear. Next up is your infamous blocking of sidewalks, you know, the laws that we're not enforcing. And lastly is business owners showing up to trash and litter at their storefronts in the morning. Let's take a short break here and let you enjoy some of the performers at our downtown Chico Saturday Farmers Market. Pay attention, though. There's a lesson to be learned here. And that is, the number one issue, bar none, is discrimination against the homeless community. That gentleman with the banjo was homeless. That second group wasn't. Guess who was kicked out of the market? Next one that happens all too frequently is verbal and often horrific physical assaults by non-homeless folks against the homeless population. And lastly, but not least, is a consistent message of police harassment in any community I've been to. All of this leads me to understand, as I put this video together, how classic the responses I get are to how minorities are discriminated against in communities throughout America, not just Chico. Okay, let's get to some better detail of why this law is so flippant and obviously ineffective for what the issues are downtown. Will it help parking? I don't think so. Loud, obnoxious, scary people walking around. After all, they'll still be there. It is a sit and lie law. Besides, we have laws against disturbing the peace. Enforce those. Obstructing a sidewalk. I saw what this law was intended to do. 19-year-old kid had been sitting in this one spot, away from the building, not bothering anyone, not obstructing the sidewalk. He'd been there on and off. He had a tendency to kind of talk to himself. Cops rolled up on him. They were talking to him. Had nothing they could do to this gentleman because he wasn't breaking any laws. Would sit and lie. He's now a criminal. Write him up. Move him out. And last but not least, it's certainly easy to see how a daytime ordinance isn't going to help trash and litter that occurs at night. So there you go. There's a decent overview of what the business climate looks like and how ineffectual this will be. Let's take the time now to look at the impact to the folks in our community experiencing homelessness with any proposed sit-lie law. Clearly, the issue of discrimination, which is so important to the homeless community, will go unaddressed at all with a specific law. It also discourages me tremendously to think about the additional impetus it is for folks to look down on homeless people and provide violence and hate. And lastly, on the regards to police harassment, try to find someone that's going to be ticketed for this or approached by a cop for sitting down on the sidewalk that's not going to think they're harassed. Thanks for the time, and be sure to remember, if you have a roof, be grateful.
Let's jump in here to the video. And I wrote down the business issues that I had seen by being an ambassador when I was the first ambassador, Giovanni Treseri and I, back when it was volunteers, I think it was either 2013 or 14.
Uh-huh.
But the business issues that we had back then were, what do you see? Do you still see the business issues as parking, loud, scary, obnoxious people, blocking of sidewalks, trash, litter, and bloody fluid? That's what I had from 2013. You know, what would you say to each one of them and maybe add what you've been seeing?
You know, honestly, that list is as much relevant today as it was when you wrote it.
Interesting.
That said, as far as the cleanliness, like you say, the litter and graffiti and bodily fluids and things like that, not to pat myself and my team on the shoulder, but ever since the ambassadors came around, and that's one of our focuses is to keep things like that clean. There is definitely a reduction of that today than there probably was, you know, in your time as an ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of that is, like I said, that's kind of what we're there for. But also, going back to that word that I keep throwing out, our community, if the community as a whole got more involved in that, it could definitely improve. And I think the business owners kind of sense that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that said, I think those problems still exist, but I think that it's definitely improved over the years, especially since the ambassadors came along. I think if you ask some of the same business owners today versus 7 years ago, if they see an improvement, if they're telling you the truth, they said that there is, and I would concur with that. Now, loud, scary noises, those do happen on occasion, and I think that's going to continue to do so as long as there's the mentally ill out there doing what they do. And that's not going to change. Because, you know, mental illness is never going to be cured.
Yeah.
It's going to continue to happen. And especially with the lack of resources to help them in Butte County, is, you know, right now, it's going to continue. And
until things improve on that end, that's going to continue to be a thing.
What about the parking? Has it gotten better? That was the number one issue.
Parking. I think parking is still an issue, but you're very well aware. I think there's a new issue concerning parking, in that they raised the rates. So I guess it's a dollar an hour now rather than 50 cents an hour, which is still a heck of a lot cheaper than most other cities you try to park in. So I think the cost thing is a little bit overblown, compared to most places. But should there be more parking? Yeah, there needs to be more. And I couldn't tell you what the solution is to that, but it is definitely still a problem.
The issue at hand, though, the whole blocking of sidewalks. I know when I looked at this in depth 7 years ago, any of the time where I was like, this person needs to go, they were already breaking some other code. Either they were blocking physical entrances, or they were sitting in the middle of the sidewalk, or they were screaming and yelling. Maybe you could kind of color the issues of blocking sidewalks downtown in your 3 years and what impact you'll think they'll be if they don't have the ability just to call a cop and move them.
The sit lie. So I'm going to tell you something that's going to go against all of the narratives.
All righty, Jason.
And here's what it is that sit lie is not needed at all. And here's the thing. So, and this is coming just strictly from the ambassador point of view. When we came along, over 2 years ago, one of the things that we were tasked to do is to remind folks about things like sit lie. And, we were just kind of reminding them, hey, you're in a doorway. You're not supposed to be there, particularly if the business is open. They'd like people to go in and out and things like that. Nine times out of ten, they would get up and move, and it would be fine. And I think if the businesses did that also, they probably wouldn't get a lot of pushback. But here's the thing. And you and I kind of talked about this online, too. It's usually the same three or four or five people.
Yep.
It's not the big widespread problem that everybody's making it out at all. It's almost a lie how it's being reported, to be honest with you. It's frustrating. I'm sorry.
Well, it is. That's the same thing I saw in 2013. But one thing to interject and get some feedback from you, I think it's really critical to have people that are able to de-escalate, because I wouldn't want to put it on the business owner to be able to go out and interact with people. I think some people would do it really well, but some would go out there angry going, but you see what I'm saying with that?
I certainly do. There's a few examples that come in mind, dealing with your identity and stuff like that. And so that's kind of where we came in, is to be like, rather than be like, hey, you can't be there, move.
We'd
be like, hey, listen, we'd be like, hey, listen, they're trying to conduct business here. Maybe move that bench right over there. It's not illegal to sit on a bench.
Right.
Just find somewhere else to be for a while. One thing we try to not, the word we try not to use, if we can help it, is the word can't.
Yep. Now they don't have an option.
You can't.
Give them an option.
Yeah, you can't do this. Put the ball in their court. It's like, give them the choices and let them make the choice.
They will. They'll do it. I have to interject.
Sure.
I have to interject because I was speaking similar language from the city council last week, Jason, in that when Sit and Lie first started to get in front of the council, all the homeless folks were in front of the Muni building, and they hadn't been. And I'm like, why are you all here? They're like, this is where the cops have pushed us. They're letting us stay here. And I'm like, I interviewed a bunch of people. I got the same thing. We used to be able, they're all pushing us here. And like you had said, absolutely, it's exactly what I saw. At least 90% of the houseless folks, maybe even higher, you ask them to move, they move. So they moved them all in front of the Muni building, and it was very nefarious by my observation, in that they wanted to show all of these homeless people, to show this big problem downtown, when in fact the police had moved them all towards that building. And then when they quote unquote approved Sit and Lie, the cops came around and told everyone to move, and they did. And then they're like, see, that new law is working. And I was just flabbergasted. Anyway, so
Like I said, it's the whole sit lie thing is completely overblown. It's like I said, the same three or four or five people that do it very constantly, and then and only then it's like, does the business want to complain? Most of the time, they don't. They don't want to make it a big deal. There are exceptions, but it's very rare.
All right, listeners just joining, this is Guillermo Mash, and you were listening to an interview with Jason Allen, a downtown Chico ambassador for 2 years, and keeping Chico clean, safe, and friendlier. Right now, we're going to transition to the introduction of the agenda item from the Chico City Council session on Tuesday, February 18th. It's led by Vice Mayor Alex Brown, followed by Mayor Randall Stone. And after that, we have a treat. We're going to come back in the studio and have a conversation with Vice Mayor Alex Brown here on People Power Radio.
Okay. Item 5.1, discussion to rescind the CITLI ordinance and to amend the offenses against public waterways, public property ordinance, excuse me. Vice Mayor Brown.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for hearing this item. My comments at the prior meeting summarized many of my thoughts around the issue of CITLI and the offenses against public property ordinance. I submitted a brief narrative to you today, and I understand that it didn't reach you in ample time for potentially everybody to review. I do apologize for the delay in that. However, I do believe it summarizes my perspective on rescinding the CITLI ordinance and either rescinding or making adjustments to the offenses against public property ordinances. I just want to note that I can understand the discomfort in this room and in these spaces with reengaging with this topic, especially with the tensions that have arisen as these conversations have been reintroduced to the chambers. I'm sorry to see so much conflict around this issue, but I'm reminded that this has been the basic tenor of nearly every conversation around these laws since they were initially introduced. I do not fault my colleagues for choosing the approach that best reflected their perspectives on improving our community in the past. However, given the data and the risks associated with these laws, I simply cannot support them. Now is the time to look at the data we have, the risks of keeping these laws in place, and the policy direction that we want to go to begin reducing the number of people experiencing homelessness in our communities. I personally and respectfully cannot endorse keeping CITLI on the books. I'd be ready to rescind the offenses against public property ordinance or make adjustments to key parts as well, at the very least until we make a serious investment and commitment to evidence-based solutions, which I know are not as near as any of us would prefer. The reality is the number of people experiencing homelessness in our community exceeds the number of shelter beds or housing units available. And as long as that's the case, we will have people existing and sleeping on our streets. I know this is concerning for all of us, but it is the reality. And as these laws are written, the acts of sitting, lying, sleeping, or having property in public spaces is prohibited. I cannot see how that is an appropriate premise to base our policy on, given that reality. I would ask this council to support this effort and to direct our collective energy to funding alternatives that do the most good for the most people. Myself and Mayor Stone are requesting that we rescind CITLI and rescind or revise the offenses against public property ordinances. However, I'm willing to collaborate with council to identify opportunities that we can make improvements to our approach. And I look forward to hearing from the public on this matter. With that, I'll allow Mayor Stone to make any comments he'd like, and then we can welcome comment or deliberation.
Well, and first of all, I did want to mention the effort. We don't normally get this from council members, and oftentimes, many times we don't necessarily get it from staff, so that's not a besmirching on City Manager Orm or any city staff, but I'm sorry that you all aren't able to have a copy of this right now, because it lays out the information culled through university research that identifies crime trends over decades and really lays out the impacts to CITLI over time and things to consider, such as other housing options and some of the impacts of some of these citations and the impact of our policies thus far. So it was a fantastic effort and piece of work, and I'm proud to have this level of information available to us for this effort. I also want to mention that we've been down this road for some time, and this discussion actually predates Vice Mayor Brown, even though she's included extensively in her report here. The CITLI ordinance, as the reports that are cited in here indicate, pushed a lot of our vagrancy problems further north, and I have argued, into our neighborhoods, which exacerbated our vagrancy problems. And so my interest in moving the rescission of CITLI is to help us to pull that back out of the neighborhoods and into a place where we can get people to services, which is a whole nother effort and a whole nother discussion that that city staff and council have been working very hard on for some time. So again, thanks to my colleague, and I appreciate the discussion from all of my colleagues since this was a vote to discuss.
And this is Peace and Social Justice on your radio station, KZFR 90.1, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And here in the studio today is Guillermo Mash, who is without a roof. Well, he's not without a roof, but he represents those without a roof.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Jesse.
Yep. And Vice Mayor Brown, Alex Brown, who is joining us today, too. Thank you both for being on the show today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Alex, this is going to sound like a really simplistic question, but in a big picture perspective, what brought this issue of sit-lie to the table?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I think context here is pretty critically important. I've been a vocal supporter of amending and or rescinding some of these laws since I campaigned in 2018, and part of that's based on, you know, professional background in the social services field. Part of that is based on some of the existing research around what these laws do and don't do for communities who have them implemented. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think I regret nothing more than not having this conversation earlier. Mm. What brought it forward at this time was that we did see kind of an increase or a surge of arrests around the offenses against public property ordinances during a rainy evening in the city of Chico. And I think it caused all of us to return our attention to, what is being accomplished right. through enforcement of these laws or through the existence of them fundamentally. So with that, I think that's what reengaged me and really wanted to take a deeper look at this. In addition to many members of the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, a body that I'm the chair of at this time and the council representative on, really wanting to engage with this topic as well. So the conversation had been conversations had been happening leading up to adding it to the agenda, and it just felt like the appropriate time to engage the community and to engage the council in this conversation.
Okay. Tell me about the results of the vote the other night.
So the request, which was brought forward by myself and by Mayor Stone, was to rescind sit-lie and to encourage the council to review, potentially revise, or rescind the offenses against public property ordinances. Mm-hmm. It had been a couple of meetings that this item wasn't heard and wasn't added to the agenda because we've had such packed meeting agendas with so many pressing issues.
Yes.
Was up for discussion on Tuesday of this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably no surprise to anybody that we had a lot of community dialogue and civic engagement around this particular
yes.
issue, you know, among others. I would argue all tied to people experiencing homelessness in some way or another.
Yes.
And so the tensions were high, I think, from either side or all sides, I would say, of this issue. The tension was palpable in the chambers as well.
I see.
So we had a discussion. I brought forward a report to council, partly because one of the council members that I chose to talk to prior to this said, "Is there a staff report on this issue?" And I said, "Oh, no, there isn't." I mean, I can imagine why, because it was my item and, I guess it just, wasn't prepared. And so I decided I'm going to prepare something that resembles a staff report to give some of the history around this issue, to outline some of the data, specifically the data done by Chico's in our community.
Which was in 2013
is when it started, yeah. And the analysis was, I think, from 2012 through 16. So it analyzed the period of time that sit-lie was in place and not, and really compared the numbers of arrests, citations, fines, and followed a lot of those citations and that in that and the geographical changes related to those citations over the time that it was in place. So really, really valuable stuff, and pretty amazing that experts in our community decided to take this on, and in spite of it being such a contentious issue, probably because it is such a contentious issue. So that report was presented. We heard from a lot of people in the public. And while my hope was to have CITLI rescinded at that meeting, a majority of council was not ready to engage with that. And so what ended up happening was that it was, I'm trying to outline this in the best way I can. A motion was made to change the penalty for CITLI from an infraction, which is essentially a fee or fine, to a referral, so that people wouldn't be cited necessarily around the issue, but would receive, you know, engagement. And then to, in some capacity, involve social workers in that engagement alongside our law enforcement professionals. That passed on a 4-3 vote after two substitute motions, one by myself to have it rescinded entirely and one by Councilmember Ori to suspend it until we have the equivalent of 250 additional shelter beds in our community. So to provide some metrics in terms of actually making some progress that's evidence-based around this issue. So that's what passed, and that's where we're at right now.
Okay.
And then as it relates to the public offenses against public property ordinances, that took a back seat in that conversation. And I think it's because it's a pretty complex piece of legislation. There's a lot to it.
Well, break down some of those complexities.
Yeah. And so, I'm trying to like put this into context a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Offenses against public property was essentially an expansion of some of the laws we already have in place. It's already illegal to camp, for example.
Right.
But these ordinances, there was one, I think, introduced in 2015, and then an expansion geographically and otherwise introduced in 2018, maybe. That might be inaccurate date-wise, but two different laws. And some of the things that were added were you can't have or store public or personal property in public spaces. So if you have camping paraphernalia or other types of public property or property, you can't store it. And so if you leave your property or you have it on your person, you could be cited and, in this case, arrested, because the penalty for violating these ordinances was expanded not just to be an infraction, but an infraction or a misdemeanor. And so that enables law enforcement to make the determination to arrest somebody rather than just citing. So lots of complicated things included in these laws. When I proposed some amendments to the council, when I realized that these weren't going to be rescinded, the focus was really on that, the penalties on storage of personal property and closing hours for the Civic Center and some of our other spaces where we know that people on our street are finding shelter in the absence of shelter beds. So hopefully that's a summary for you.
Thank you. Bill, you had some questions.
Well, you know, one thing I want to add, actually, is because it's real succinct. I just want our listeners to know what is in this ordinance. The prohibition on sit and lie reads as such. This is 9.44.015 of city ordinance. Prohibition is no person shall sit or lie upon a public sidewalk, curb, or street, or upon a blanket, stool, chair, or other object placed upon a public sidewalk, curb, or street which is adjacent to any property zoned or used for commercial uses, as defined in Title 19 of this code, between the hours of 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. So I just want our listeners to know what the law read on that.
Okay.
And the law illustrates the cost of doing so if a citation is issued is a fine of $100 for the first offense, I think $200 for the second offense, and $300 for the third offense. Mm-hmm. And so, as we and I think many of our community know, people without homes often don't have the financial resources to be able to pay fines either,
right,
let alone to travel to a court date in Oroville.
And it becomes a joke then.
Yeah. I mean, what it becomes is a cycle,
right?
I can't pay my fees. Then I have a failure to appear or what's called a bench warrant, and
right.
I am automatically a criminal in that context, meaning I could be, you know, stopped or arrested at any given time. And I do want to, you know, recognize that our police department shared that they are not issuing, very, very sparsely issuing citations for sit lie.
Sure.
My understanding is that for offenses against public property, it's similar. Although I know some citations and arrests have been made related to those ordinances. But I think what brought me to this issue is kind of the 10,000-foot view, right? If you have ordinances on the books that say you cannot do these acts of living that are required if you do not have a roof over your head, right? Regardless of how they're enforced, the existence of that really shapes our culture and our context around homelessness, invisible poverty, and class. Let's be, sure. You know, to think about it a little bit more broadly. Yeah. And so, you know, to have a council endorse that in any way is problematic, in my opinion.
That's a good point. So a lot of these things are being brought up as public safety issues. So, Alex, as a social worker, how do we deal with public safety and public safety issues?
Yeah, complicated word, a term, right? Public safety in terms of how we, the lens we see it through, right?
Sure.
And I would argue that in the, you know, years as the issue of homelessness has grown in our community, those you know, crime and homelessness have become interchangeable terms,
right?
to certain segments of the community. And
yes.
You know, when I campaigned in 2018, it's as a social worker, right? So understanding that public safety is much bigger than people who are committing crimes or not. Mm-hmm. It's also about public health. It's also about the ways that we collaborate to reduce the impact on our law enforcement professionals by involving service providers in that process and that progress. And part of my background is in sexual assault and domestic violence prevention and response. And so that was really the place where I got to see firsthand some of the ways that you can collaborate with law enforcement to provide better service to people involved in the criminal justice system on one side or the other. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the gaps in those services and opportunities for us to make them better. And so when I campaigned in 2018, it was really about expanding our definition of public safety to include service providers, with the understanding that our service providers have a certain level of expertise that can actually prevent things from escalating to becoming criminal behavior. And so collaborating with our shelter providers, working to expand those shelter opportunities, making sure that they're low barrier, so people who are struggling with substance use or mental health have access to a roof over their head and a consistent place to be.
Yeah.
And then also collaborating with, you know, a variety of other, you know, providers that offer different services to people who are either victims of crime or people who are struggling with issues that could escalate to crime.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to add, because we were talking about this before we turned the mics live, and this is a quote. Your basic assumption and compassion for the homeless community will have an impact on what you do as a community and as an individual. Lloyd Pendleton, Director, Homeless Task Force, State of Utah. That was an interview I did back in 2016.
Yeah.
And I can't land on that hard enough, because if you're going to view people that are sitting down as criminals and you're going to be angry at them for being there, That's gonna impact how you're gonna respond to actually helping them,
yeah.
And I don't think we can possibly put enough focus on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, that quote is really potent, because the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force actually brought Lloyd Pendleton and collaborated with other organizations to bring Lloyd Pendleton to our community.
Yeah.
I think several years back to 2016 talk through, you know, housing solutions and how we. How we perceive and respond to people experiencing homelessness.
Yeah.
And I think the conversation and the context has really escalated, and these laws have become a symbol more than any sort of functional mechanism to address the issue. And there's a certain belief system that removing them is going to create chaos. But I would argue the chaos is here.
Yeah,
That tension,
say so.
That
yeah.
division, mm. that that fear, that anger about escalating poverty in our community is already here. And there is no indication that the existence of these laws has done anything to reduce that. In fact, I would argue it's increased it.
Yeah. our third segment today. We have Kate McCarthy. I interviewed her earlier this week concerning polarization, bringing people together, trying to get out of this cycle that we're in. So Alex, oh, golly, do we want to even get into needle exchange? Is that something we want to get
into?
We're
going to do that. We're going to air, so we can do that after we air the other clips.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah. Just joining, this is Guillermo Mash with a special Without a Roof radio segment here on the Peace and Social Justice Show. And we are interviewing Jason Allen, a longtime downtown ambassador who has recently moved to Reno, and he's sharing his experiences, his insights, and his wisdom from what he's seen on the streets for over 2 years in Chico, California, here on People Power Radio. Needles. It has been a lot of talk about needles. I wanted to ask you in regards to your experience with needles and, you know, have you seen more or less, or, you know, just your general, what's going on with needles downtown?
Yeah, I'm very aware of what you're talking about, and the program that's in place, I love the intention. I think it's very important that something other than the status quo of before is happening. That said, we definitely have seen, the ambassador program has definitely seen a lot more needle litter out and about since that program began than we did before. Is that a good thing? Obviously not. Is there a solution to that? I have ideas. I don't know how realistic they are, but obviously making that program a true exchange rather than just a distribution would be very helpful. And I think it would also kind of quiet the bad opinion of the program. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think it needs to happen. I do agree with the detractors in saying that there is an increased litter problem, needle litter problem, and it needs to be addressed. I do believe that.
I had an idea that was, you know, it seems to be the most valuable recyclable opportunity in the community, i.e. what everyone's complaining about. I don't know why they couldn't consider, you know, paying people to bring back a full thing of used Sharps needles. I mean, once you make them worth some value, which they seem to have since no one wants to see them, that would be another way to get them off the streets. What'd you say to that?
Well, absolutely, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the needle users, you know. If people out in the community, rather than going, you know, throwing their hands in the air and saying, oh, goodness, a needle, well, you know, we're going straight to hell, contribute to the solution, you know. Obviously, be careful if you're going to pick up a needle or whatever, but, you know, do it instead of just complaining to the internet.
Right.
Just pick it up, bring it back to the park where it's happening. As you say, you know, have some sort of incentive for it. If that's what needs to happen, do it. You know, if we are a true community, in the sense of the word, I'm harping on that a lot tonight, but if you are a true community, be a part of the community and be a part of the solution.
Right.
Don't just restate the problem in an echo chamber.
Yeah, exactly. I talked to someone that, you know, there's so much polarization. I said, I talked to this person that was really, every time she sees someone reports the needles, that person says it's planted. I had a nice type of opportunity to talk to her. I said, it's such hyperbolic. I mean, not every needle that's on the ground was planted, and neither is every needle found on the ground was planted. There's some place in the middle. And the person said to me, it was kind of interesting, he says, I know that, but it makes them mad.
What's the point of that? You know, it's like, okay, cool. You've made the people you disagree with mad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what have you accomplished exactly?
Yeah, wouldn't it be my strategy?
How is that part of the solution?
With that said, though, how many needles are used versus unused, and would you be able to even weigh in if you think people would be dropping needles just so they can go, look, there's a needle?
I would say, in my experience, as far as what I've picked up, I would say a good 90 to 95% of them were used.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's important to know, Jason. I appreciate that. Guillermo Mash here. Thank you, Jason Allen, downtown ambassador for 2 years, keeping the town clean, safe, and friendlier. I'm going to transition now to the city council session on Tuesday, the February 18th. I'm going to lead with Dr. Lindsay Briggs, a PhD in public health. And then I'm going to transition to Council Member Morgan introducing the agenda item on the discussion on the needle exchange here on People Power Radio.
Lindsay Briggs, followed by Nicole Nava.
Hello, Council. My name is Dr. Lindsay Briggs. I have a PhD in public health with a specific focus on health behavior, which is otherwise known as why and how do people make decisions about their public health and other sort of health practices. I've worked in public health for over 15 years, including in sexual health, substance use prevention and treatment, and specifically HIV community service. As a health scientist, I am sick to death of hearing the current climate of armchair motor mouths and people who think that their opinions are just as good as my science. That's simply not true. You're entitled to your opinions, of course, right? This is a free country. We're allowed to have these sort of things. However, our public policy decisions should be made with evidence basis. That is what we do in this country. We aren't a country of beliefs. We have a freedom of church and state for a reason. We have all these sort of things where we derive all of our information from the public good based on science and evidence. Just because someone isn't comfortable with an idea doesn't mean it's bad. It actually means that we have to look at it, these sort of things and investigate. A lot of the interventions that we talk about in town are evidence-based. It doesn't mean that we love them. It doesn't mean that we think they're the best possible sort of thing. But what it does mean is we've looked at the science to figure out how do we best solve these sort of issues. We should not be punished for the ignorance and the fear of other people. Whether the issue is addiction, housing and homelessness, or mental health, the root cause of most of these issues are trauma. Asking traumatized people to navigate a broken system is pretty asinine, if you ask me. Stop saying no to every attempt to help people when people are saying, hey, we're willing to do whatever it is to get help to people. Yes, are there better ways? Sure. Will we be in favor of those? Absolutely. We're a university town. We should start acting like it and believe the professionals and not the armchair sort of quarterbacks who are uncomfortable with every idea that we present. Thank you.
Oh, discuss and consider ordinance banning needle distribution programs. So I think I got a second on that because I see a whole discussion considered something to make the needle distribution program better. Here's where I think this goes. We're going to have a bunch of public discussion. People are going to say various things. One side's going to attack and say this stops AIDS and hepatitis C, and the other people are going to say this makes for an unsafe community. One group is going to have all kinds of old statistics that are probably wrong and haven't worked other places, and the other group's going to say this is common sense and logical, and why in God's name would you ever hand these things out? And there's no logical way that a needle distribution actually cuts down on needle trash in the community. A needle exchange might. My fear is we're going to end up somewhere on some kind of compromise that asks North Valley Harm Reduction Coalition to do their job. I was going to say do their job better, but I don't think they do it because they're supposed to be cleaning things up. That's not happening. We do have statistics from the police department proving that. So I'm not going to make a motion. I'm not going to do anything other than say this is why I brought this up. I think that common sense dictates that the parks, the public waterways, everywhere we go, our children, our civilians, any of these people shouldn't have to come across. It's not one or two needles. There's needles everywhere. Our police department's being called on to pick these things up. That's not their job. We're spending far too much time and resources and efforts picking up after people that can't make good decisions. It's now through no fault of their own. I'm not even faulting them. If I started shooting heroin, I'm sure in a week I couldn't make a proper decision. Okay, but if I started showing up at a park where they're giving me a bunch of needles, that's not going to suddenly make me get any better. This gets back to our conversation earlier about accountability and which part of society or this city do we want to honor and protect. I want to honor and protect everybody, but there's no compassion in giving drug kits to drug addicts. It's like giving a guy driving a DUI, pulling him over, giving him a bottle of vodka and saying, go about your merry way. I don't care what statistics anybody has. People have been talking about, people come up here and go, oh, this person says they've lived in this community longer than this person, that person, that person's a white supremacist because they took it from the Indians and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I lived here and I didn't live here, and I've lived here since I was four. And this is not the community I grew up in. I wouldn't take my kids to the park if they were young. I wouldn't let them slide down the slides. And for them to say, oh, you just have to go check for the needles first? Well, no, this isn't San Francisco. It's not LA. It's not Seattle. I don't want it to become that way. And that's why I will stand by the ban. And I will not negotiate for an exchange for any reason, unless it is pushed down our throats by the state, which it has been. And when I make the motion, we'll go from there. But that's my opening slavo. Thank you.
All right. That was Sean's opening slavo. This is Peace and Justice here on KZFR. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Apollo Music and Arts in Chico, offering everything from toddler classes to classes in vocals, guitars, drums, bass, piano, wind or string instruments with private and group lessons for beginners and up. They even offer a triple threat class for those inspiring to dance, act, and sing. More information at Apollo School of Music on Facebook and by calling 924-4469 and by Live Life Juice Company, providing fresh, locally made organic cold-pressed juices and elixirs, plus vegan and gluten-free organic food. Open weekdays from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., weekends 10 p.m. to 6 p.m. with delivery services available. More information, it is at livelifejuice.com on Facebook and Instagram and at 566-3346. Live Life Juice Company, pure, fresh juice. Drink to your health. And joining us is Vice Mayor Alex Brown and Bill Mass. We don't have a whole lot of time, but let's talk about this needle exchange.
Sounds good.
And this opening slavo here. Bill, I know you had a question.
I only had
about
one.
This.
I had okay. one because that Morgan in his opening slavo makes the comment that, you know, just showing up at a needle exchange isn't going to suddenly make you better. That is almost 180 degrees out from what actually occurs in that park. Yeah. You know, people are showing up. They're getting tested for, you know, communicable diseases. They're able to kind of connect with folks that might be able to help them out. So I would ask Mr. Morgan if someone could get him a message. Why don't he go out there with some open eyes and open arms and maybe go with someone from the Interfaith Council and get out there and see actually what's going on instead of just making, in my estimation, flippant comments. Mm-hmm. That's all I have.
Okay. What about you, Alex?
Oh, goodness. Let me slavo this one. So here's the thing, and I said this at the council meeting, and I think I'll be consistent. A lot of my background is in harm reduction, not as it relates to substance use disorders, but relationships, you know, relationship education, sex education, et cetera. One thing that's very, very clear is that harm reduction is counterintuitive until you understand the evidence basis of it. And so I think that the mere conversation about harm reduction, and then you tie this to a contentious issue like substance use disorders and, you know, people struggling specifically visibly with substance use disorders, and you've got a recipe for a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding. And you know, some of the comments that I've heard are a commentary about people struggling with substances and how we have culturally been conditioned to view those folks. But, you know, I find myself really struggling to make any sort of compromise that ignores evidence, the evidence of harm reduction, the evidence of these programs. And so it's complicated. It's complex. It's an emotional topic with a lot of cultural influence. I think we do have to lean in and trust the evidence and understand that we've got a program in our community that's working to adapt and consistently improve to provide the best service possible.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time, but this is my shtick here on Peace and Social Justice. I always ask our guests if they have a word of hope to offer, because we live in the problem a lot. We discuss the problem a lot. We try to go into the solution as well. But I also like to live in the realm of hope as well. What word of hope do you have to offer us today, Alex?
Here's the thing. The fact that we are having these conversations, that we're having them in the public, and that we are bringing the concept of social justice to these issues in the public space is so critically important to culture change. Big reason why I got into politics at all was to influence culture change. And so even though it's hard, having these conversations does something to move us forward.
That's great. Thank you so much, Alex. I appreciate you and the time that you give to the show. This is Peace and Social Justice.
90.1 KZF. WFR presents In Chico, an evening with Tim Flannery and the Lunatic Fringe. Coming to the Chico Women's Club on Friday, March 6th.
Never thought I'd get away. I'll be gone from you now, ghost town. Cost too much of me.
Tim Flannery and the Lunatic Fringe. Tim is the former San Francisco Giants third base coach who set out on his own with a great band and brings their awesome sound to the Chico Women's Club on Friday, March 6th. Tim Flannery and the Lunatic Fringe at the Women's Club. Don't miss the stories, the songs, and the band. Get tickets for Tim Flannery and the Lunatic Fringe at Chico Paper Company, Blaze and Jays, and online at kzfr.org. Tickets only $20 in advance. Beer from Sierra Nevada. This is a seated show. More info online at kzfr.org.
And this is KZFR 90.1. This is Peace and Social Justice. I'm your third Friday host, Pastor Jesse. And for our last segment here, we've been talking a lot. Like I say, we've been living in the problem, and I like to live in the solution and live in hope. My last interview here is with Kate McCarthy for a podcast that I do called Faith and Common Ground. It's associated with the Chico Area Interfaith Council. I do this podcast with my co-host, Amber St. Clair. So I'm going to play this last segment for you with Kate McCarthy.
Joining me today is Kate McCarthy, Dean of Undergraduate Education and Professor of Comparative Religions at Chico State. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks.
We've been doing a lot of talking lately here at the station and at my church about how polarized our country is right now. And I see it in local politics. I, of course, see it in national politics. And I see it dealing with it even in my own local congregation. I remember, if you look back in history, it's not like that we have never been through a time in our country where we've been polarized. In fact, if you look way back in history, you can see where people are mudslinging and such like that. But I know in my own lifetime, and even in the lifetime of some older folks in our congregation, I cannot remember when it has been polarized to the point where one political party actually thinks that the other is a threat to our country.
I think we are at a low point for a generation, but it is important to remember that we've been here before nationally and we have survived it. We just have to figure out how.
Okay. Well, that's why I want to talk to you today. Tell me about what you think is the most pressing issue when it comes to our polarization as a country.
Well, I want to start by saying I come at this as a person who thinks and talks about religion more than politics. Okay. I have no training as a political scientist. But over the past few years, I've been thinking a great deal about how what we know about how people with different religious orientations relate to each other, what that has to tell us about how people who are politically different relate to each other. And I think there are lessons to be learned from one for the other. What I think is most pressing is that we have dehumanized one another. Mm. We don't actually argue about policy much in my experience of this really polarized climate. We just sort of throw ideological labels at each other and thereby dismiss each other. And there's really not a great deal of engagement across those lines.
Yeah, and I see that too quite a bit. I don't want to say in my own congregation in that people are at each other's throats, but they don't want to talk about issues.
Right. We want to be polite because we're afraid, because we've seen in media and especially social media how ugly it gets, and who wants to be part of that?
Yeah. Oh, social media. I know it's a good tool, and it's a tool that I ought to use as a minister, but I don't even like going on Facebook anymore and seeing some of the things from friends, people who I'm close to on either side of the aisle,
yeah,
and some of the just terrible things that they say about each other. Right. They're not talking about policy anymore.
No, and somehow that medium makes it easier. I once had a nun friend in college who was so frustrated with the institution of the Catholic Church that she said she was practicing ecclesiastical fasting and not okay. going to church for a while. I feel that way about, I'm fasting from social media because it's not a healthy
yeah.
space.
I went on sabbatical in 2016. Oddly enough, it was the summer of 2016, and I did. I took a break from anything but just the headlines of news for 12 weeks because it was just overwhelming for me. Now, mind you, I was kind of surprised when I got back from sabbatical in September 2016, and
there it was.
There it was, but it's a real thing. Why do you suppose people hide behind that?
Do you mean specifically
social media?
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Well, there's something easy about the anonymity, and there's something comforting about being in our own friendly ideological bubbles that facilitates. I know when I've been in moments of political darkness, I have turned to those areas of social media that I know will back me up and
right.
and mirror my frustration back to me, which feels good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's short-lived. You know, it doesn't take you very far, I, in my experience.
Right. How did this start? How is it that we came to this place?
Gosh. I think it's extremely complicated. You know, things happen culturally, things happen politically, things happen environmentally, but I think we can't underestimate the impact of our media fragmentation, where we don't all have a common news source anymore, so we don't even agree on the basic facts
right.
about which to argue, and it's really hard to engage the other when we don't have a shared common ground of truth.
Yeah. And there's so many outlets now. There's so many sources
right.
of news.
Right. And some, you know, we're now getting really scary information about how easy it is to outright fabricate
mm-hmm.
news and even video.
Yeah.
But even leaving that aside, the ideological narrowness and the almost complete blurring, even in media sites that I tend to like, blurring between editorial and news.
Right. So let's live in the solution rather than the problem, because
nice.
the problem is evident.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the solution, especially as it relates to religion and interfaith work, because that's something that we are both mm-hmm. passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the role of religious communities, faith communities, are in trying to bring our polarized culture back together?
Well, unfortunately, many of the religious communities are just as polarized.
What? Really?
And frequently, it's political divisions around issues of race and gender and the various
yeah.
things that divide us have historically led to denominational splits.
Right.
So it's not that the faith communities have this down in any way.
Sure.
But there's something I think that's possibly useful in that faith communities are linked by a common set of stories, sometimes rituals, sometimes, you know, cultural artifacts, music, etc.,
mm-hmm.
That can still bring people who deeply disagree into community with one another. So I think they point to the value of spaces where, almost where we're forced to be together.
Mm.
I often think of how great it is that Chico is still a small enough community that we can't totally escape each other
right.
into totally private enclaves. So I think that's a value sort of structurally that faith communities provide.
Mm-hmm. I know that in, well, you were talking about some strife that was within a lot of even denominations mm-hmm. now. It's not necessarily mm-hmm. just a Christian versus Muslim or Hindu. Or
no, in fact,
like
that's actually quite uncommon. You know, the yeah. I mean, we think of interreligious conflict when we think of, you know, Ireland and Catholics and Protestants, or the Middle East and Jews and Christians and Muslims, but really, I mean, I think the interfamily conflicts are often the most painful yes. and the most deep, and those sort of geopolitical conflicts are, and I don't want to generalize, but are often driven by things wholly unrelated to
sure.
to anything spiritual or faith-based.
Yeah. I really feel for my brothers and sisters in the United Methodists right now mm-hmm. who are struggling with just dealing with LGBTQI
yep.
issues
yep.
and how people that are gender and sexual minorities fit into the life of the church and mm-hmm. into the life of the leadership of the church mm-hmm. even.
But I do think we've learned from the interfaith movement, which is now well over 100 years old in this country, some strategies and principles that make that kind of engagement potentially fruitful. For instance, I think one lesson learned in the interfaith movement is that when people engage in dialogue with someone who is religiously different, there's often a fear of loss of faith, right?
Right.
But in fact, the reality is that never happens. In mm-hmm. my experience, that pretty much never happens. There's a quote from T.S. Eliot that I have loved since college that always comes back to me. He says in one of his poems, he says, "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive at where we started and know the place for the first time."
That's powerful.
Isn't that lovely? So
yes.
we go into this deep dialogue and immerse ourselves as much as we can in the worldview of another. We don't take on that worldview. We come home to our own and understand it more deeply, because it challenges us to ask questions about, why do I believe what I believe? What does my tradition teach about this topic? Mm-hmm. Are there aspects of that other tradition, maybe, you know, a prayer practice that can enrich my own faith? So I think that the traits that we learn in interfaith work are traits of openness and humility and vulnerability, because it is a risk.
Yes.
I remember being in a conversation with one young person a long time ago about she was an evangelical Christian, a fundamentalist Christian, and I was talking to her about some other religious ways of seeing, and she literally put her hands over her ears because it felt frightening to her. Right. Mm. So there's a bravery about entering into these other worldviews. But what if we could do that politically?
Mm.
What if we could have the courage to open our own worldview to the possibility of being informed by the other worldview? I used to say, in talking about this, that, you know, if we think of our polarization as a line, and we've got the far, far left at one end and the far, far right at the other, and the vast majority of us are somewhere in that middle space.
Yeah.
And I used to say, yeah, you're never going to get that weird uncle at the far other end, you know, to engage. But maybe you right. can turn to the person two ticks to the left or right of you and engage. But now I don't actually think it's a continuum like that. I think there are people who are deeply conservative politically and mm-hmm. people who are deeply liberal, progressive, who are and are not open to engagement with the other. I don't think it's right. a matter of how far left or how far right you are. I think it's a more fundamental disposition than that. So if we are able to find those, I'm quite progressive in my political worldview. If I'm able to find a conservative who has a, regardless of, you know, how antithetical their political positions are, if they have that disposition of openness
yeah.
to see me as human and ask me good, hard questions, mm-hmm. that's the person I'm going to engage with.
Right. And if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR
listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Peace and social justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Locally owned, Quicksilver provides reliable courier service for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality delivery service 24/7. And by Tim Kemper, a mortgage specialist with Guild Mortgage. Tim is a longtime supporter of KZFR and specializes in first-time homebuyers and reverse mortgages. To learn more about how Tim can make your dreams come true, visit timkemperloans.com or call him at 530-377-3954, MLO number 977-542. This is Peace and Social Justice. I am your third Friday host, Jesse Kearns. We've had a good variety of guests on the show today, including Alex Brown, Bill Mash, and right now we're in the midst of an interview with Kate McCarthy, who is the Dean of Undergraduate Education at Chico State University and a professor of comparative religions. And we are talking about polarization. So let's conclude this interview today.
I know that one of the friends that I have is a conservative Christian. I consider myself a progressive Christian, and this person very much holds on to a conservative Christian worldview. And that relationship that we have at first was tenuous. We didn't know what to think of each other, but when we discovered that we were just human beings that shared some of the same interests, we get to the point where we kind of joke with each other now. I always tell him, you know, you're not as conservative as you think you are, and he'll always say, well, you're not as liberal as you think you are. And we find ourselves being able to speak more openly about some of the things just in the relationship that we have. How do we help people to come together like that? How do we create avenues of dialogue?
Well, one of the things I'd want to say up front is that I don't think this is everybody's work.
Yeah.
I think there are people for whom engaging across those lines is not safe. I think people who are vulnerable by reason of their immigration status or racial ethnic identity in racialized communities, I'm not going to ask those folks to engage across a difficult line of difference.
Right.
I feel like that's the work of people who have more privilege. So I think that's my job in a lot of ways, especially as an educator. So I think there are interpersonal strategies and then more structural strategies. I think what you've just suggested in relationship with your conservative friend is telling, that you start with the relationship.
Right.
Right. We don't go up to a stranger and have these. We can't productively engage with a stranger. So, but if we put ourselves in spaces, literally, you know, not isolate ourselves in the same geographical settings all the time. If we put ourselves in spaces where we can even meet one another, whether it's a community organization, whether it's a faith-based organization, we can begin to build those relationships. Then I think there are some dialogical strategies that that again we can draw on from the interfaith movement, where we practice real listening, that is not waiting for the pause in the conversation to begin to assert our own position again, but listen to understand. I always promote the value of authentic curiosity, and I'll sometimes put students through an exercise where those who feel deeply and differently about a given issue have to go through this kind of structured dialogue process where they tell a story that illustrates where that process, where that position came from. So not all the sort of enumerated reasons why I believe in stricter gun laws or whatever the issue is, but here's a story. Here's a thing that happened in my life. And then the other person tells a story that informs how they arrived at their position. Then we have to ask each other for more. We ask a curious question about that position. Then we begin to get into real human-to-human conversation. So those are some sort of techniques from what we've learned about, and not just in interfaith settings, but about dialogue, you know, from communications experts and therapists even, about what authentic listening looks like. But there are also, which I think is a very encouraging thing, there are also a lot of organizations emerging and growing that are creating structured opportunities for people in communities to do this. I think especially of an organization called Better Angels, which is a national organization that I think predated the 2016 election, but has certainly grown since. And they put on workshops. They call them red-blue workshops of various sorts, getting reds and blues to talk to each other, again, in a very structured way. And we did one of, we brought Better Angels here and did one of these workshops in Chico a year or so ago. And one of the exercises they had us do that I thought was so interesting was, each group team, you know, the red team and the blue team, had to separately identify, like we go to separate rooms and we list, what do we think are the negative stereotypes that the other side has about us? So the conservatives identified that they think they get stereotyped as racists.
Mm, right.
And the blues stereotyped that they think, concluded that they thought they got stereotyped as bleeding hearts, who weren't especially informed or practical in their position. So we go come up with these lists, and then we have to come back together and talk about what's the alternative. So we tell the other group, no, that's not true. We actually believe this. But then the hard part was each group had to identify what is the kernel of truth in that stereotype. What's the source of that? And that's that vulnerability, that humility. So you got to build that carefully in these kind of structured encounters. But I think that's the key to it, is having the courage to be vulnerable, to say, yeah, you know, some of the positions that my party or my wing of the political spectrum takes, I got some questions about. I see some problems there. Then we can start to engage in a substantive way.
Right. And I see where that has happened in the interfaith movement. Tell me about the event that you had in the City Plaza, in 2017. What was
that?
Yeah,
this was a great event that just a group of community people, admittedly, we were progressives. This was a blue effort. But we, following that election, we were so horrified at what we had become as a country, mm-hmm. and we knew we were better than this. So we wanted to do some public demonstration of that. So we just did a little fun event in the City Plaza on a Thursday night farmers market night.
Oh, right, yeah.
Where we organized people by just with poles that had signs at the top. And we had like 8 or 10 different groups, like hunters and fishermen over here, yoga lovers over here, farmers over here, educators over here, gamers had their own. So
gamers,
we had all these different kinds of identities about whom you might be tempted to have a stereotype,
sure.
right?
Yep.
Especially a red-blue kind of stereotype.
Yep.
And each of those groups had a basket of plastic balls of a certain color.
Mm-hmm.
And then up on the stage in the plaza, we had a giant mesh basket. And I asked a series of questions, and if you could respond from any of those groups, if you could respond yes to that question, you brought one of your colored balls up and put it in the basket, and you spent a minute introducing yourself to the people from those other groups who shared that identity. And these were lighthearted things mostly, like who loves to dance, mm-hmm. who has a tattoo. And so you would see these odd combinations of yoga lovers and hunters, you know, coming together and talking about just for a minute this thing they have in common. And in the process, we're filling up this giant mesh basket of all these multicolored balls,
right.
demonstrating that
yeah, we got a lot more in common than we might assume. And that was it. We played some music, we danced, and we went home.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I was a part of that. I can't remember whether I intentionally came down there for that or if I
just stumbled. It was just in the midst of the market, so a lot of people just stumbled by.
Yeah, but it was good because I remember what got me were gamers and farmers. That was the group that I ended up being in when I was playing with that. So, well, that's good because events like this in the community are certainly helpful. How about in our faith communities? How do you think we can teach, or at least the spiritual leaders can teach folks in their within their faith community to engage in these things as far as the work of coming together and depolarizing goes?
Well, I always think food helps. I think all of these events should revolve around food, especially people contributing food for each other to share. But I think you've got to find people who want to do this. Nobody should be dragged to this work or shamed into this work. That's not useful. But I do think there's a hunger for it. Nobody likes the climate of our country right now. Nobody likes it. And as you say, it's local too. So I think, again, I like the idea of stories. So how can we come together, especially in a faith community, around a shared story? And if we can identify, it involves this courage of self-identifying. If I identify as a conservative, can I sit with my fellow congregant who identifies as a liberal or a progressive and tell how we relate to this shared story in a way that gets at those differences? I do this work in a classroom, so it's quite different. But I think the principles are basically the same. Lead people gently, make it a safe space, start with stories, not manifestos, and find that common ground without forcing agreement. Agreement is never the goal. It's just seeing each other as humans.
Right. And it goes beyond just the agree to disagree, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't even like that.
I don't either. I mean, of course we agree to disagree. That's the state of reality.
Yeah.
I think there's a desire for deeper engagement that we're tending to flee from out of fear, and that's too bad.
Yeah. So in an ideal world, as this unfolds and as we progress, project a little bit into the future and tell me what kind of, if these principles are embraced and we start living in this way, what's our world going to be like?
Wow. So much richer, so much more productive. You know, we're so stuck. Look at Washington. We're getting absolutely nothing done.
Right.
We can't get anything done in this state of just mutually assured destruction. You know, that's where we are. We're just in an arms race of hostility. I think at the Chico level, I want to get to know my neighbors better.
Yeah.
I want to, and who knows what these new district elections are going to do? This is going to be really interesting.
Yes.
Our council's going to change. Maybe it will be a fresh start for us. I kind of like to think that. I have visions of block parties and new emerging community organizations around shared interests that don't divide us politically. You know, it's interesting. You talk about the role of the faith communities. One thing that I worry about is that the faith communities are one of those spaces, as I was saying, that create the possibility for conversation across political lines.
Mm-hmm.
Most congregations are not growing, right?
Correct.
The fastest growing sector of the religious economy is non-religious people.
Yep. SBNR, spiritual but not religious.
Yes, or the NONES, the nuns.
Yeah.
What spaces will those people find that are not ideologically locked down? That's my concern. So I really think we do need a birth of new kinds of community organizations. Yeah. And fortunately, I'm old enough that I can hand this work to my children's generation because they give me a great deal of hope.
Absolutely. Well, Kate, thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate all the work that you do, and I appreciate the time you gave today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
And you are tuned to listener-supported community radio, 90.1 KZFR Chico. My name's Ray, and I'll have a community calendar coming up next. And stay tuned for Playing Dead, Music of the Grateful Dead, every Friday afternoon. Beautiful day out. If you're out on your bike, look both ways. Be careful out there. Slow down. All that groovy stuff. Smell the roses.
What's the deal, KZ, for our listeners? I'm the big homie, J Pounds, and you know what time it is. That's right. It's time for another one of your KZFR 90.1 FM community calendars. Sunday, February 23rd, 1078 Gallery will be hosting a live improv show presenting a Mardi Gras improv. 1078 Gallery also hosts live improv drop-in classes every Monday at 7 p.m. This event will be located at 1710 Park Avenue right here in Chico. For more information, reach out to 1078gallery.org or call 530-433-1043. Also Sunday, February 23rd, AAUW will hold an ANTAC appraisal fair fundraiser to send 8th grade girls to STEM camp at UC Davis. This event will be held Sunday, February 23rd at the Chico Women's Club. 592 East 3rd Street is the address. And the event will take place from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. For more information, go to aauwchico@gmail.com. Monday, February 24th, Enlow's Junior Volunteer Program is now accepting applications for the 2020-2021 school year. Junior volunteers commit to weekly shifts with an opportunity to engage in hospital activities that support patients, visitors, and staff. Additional benefits include skills training and development. Graduating seniors are eligible to apply for Enlow's $1,000 Junior Volunteer Scholarship Award. The application and more information are available by visiting www.enlow.org/volunteers. And also, more questions and information can be directed to the Enlow Volunteer Services at 530-332-4575. Saturday, February 29th and Sunday, March 1st, Explore Butte County looks forward to the Museum Weekend. The event was created to promote and celebrate history, art, and culture throughout Butte County's extensive network of museums and cultural centers. Museums, galleries, and other cultural destinations across the country will be opening their doors for the first annual event. All participating locations will be open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on both Saturday and Sunday for free, so visitors can have full access to the wide range of Butte County's cultural offerings. For more information about this event, reach out to Ashley Bear at 530-918-4585. All right, my good people, that is my time. If you feel like there is an event that isn't on here, but you definitely know should be, feel free to reach out to us at cc@kzfr.org. From the West Side with love, I'm the big homie J.